And now, your government and your privacy. Accidents will happen? Well, a government agency with a record of thousands of privacy lapses. Is this a Fourth Amendment disaster or a sign that in the era of big data, a mere thousand errors is actually an exemplary record of oversight on unauthorized domestic surveillance? A report last week from the Washington Post, based on the classified documents from now Russian-based leaker Edward Snowden, goes beyond the mere idea of what the NSA is electronically capable of, which was alarming or powerful enough, depending on what you think about the government's approach to global terrorism, to something else. These latest revelations show a pattern of lapses or even disregard for the constitutional rules set up to oversee this staggering NSA capability to monitor. Bart Gellman, who reported this story for the Washington Post, joins us now. Mr. Gellman, welcome to The Takeaway.
Pleasure to be here.
So do you see this as 2,000 or so smoking guns on the part of the NSA, or 2,000 in a billion-dollar sort of data set is nothing?
It really depends how you look at it, whether you're interested in the proportion or the absolute number. You know, if they have a billion air passengers every year, for instance, if they only lose your luggage 1% of the time, what is that, 10 million? It seems like a fairly large number to you, and it's going to bother you a lot if your luggage is lost.
The thing that's really disturbing about your story, though, is that even when there are programs in place, specific oversight patterns in place, there seems to be a sense that the NSA sometimes tries to cover up what it's done, or even when it knows what's happening, doesn't really change things on a timely basis.
Well, look, like any big organization, especially any big secret organization, it's not especially interested in having anybody else in its business. And it was eyebrow-raising, at least, to say that when they made a big mistake some years ago and started listening or actually intercepting call data records from Washington instead of from Egypt because they confused the area code 202 with the country code 20, they did not consider that a reportable infraction that anybody had to know.
And that's just because it's a typographical error, and therefore on their own, by their own investigation, there's no intent there, so therefore nobody needs to know about it?
Well, a little bit. I mean, they report lots of typographical errors, and this was actually an interaction between several different sort of automated systems that misunderstood each other. Nevertheless, it fell between the cracks of their required reports. They have a number of authorities under several different laws. They have masters elsewhere in the executive branch, in the judiciary, and in Congress. And each has very specific requirements, so they didn't feel like this one met any of them.
Just, you know, without prejudging here, is this your sense that the NSA is incapable of following the rules of the FISA courts, or that the FISA courts are simply not scaled to deal with what the NSA's capability is?
Well, I think it's much more the latter. There are only two instances in the history of the FISA court when a judge has made an on-the-record statement to a reporter. Both of them were to my colleague Carol Lettig, and the most recent was the chief judge, Reggie Walton, who told her that the court simply doesn't have either the resources or the mission independently to verify what the NSA tells it. If the government reports an infraction, the court will ask questions and try to get to the bottom of it and demand a fix. But it depends on the government itself to come report an infraction.
So the oversight systems on this NSA capability are simply symbolic, that the way that the structure of big data and electronic surveillance is right now, it's got to be the NSA that does the reporting. It's got to be the NSA that does its own oversight. And the FISA courts are a kind of a nice hood ornament on a much bigger vehicle here.
Look, I think the main significance of the story for me is that the many layers of safeguards and checks and balances and oversight and rigorous review that have been described so often by the government on the NSA are not nearly all those things. They're simply not capable of managing the behavior of an organization this large and this powerful. I mean, the intelligence committees in Congress have less than a handful of staffers who work full-time on managing the NSA, which has tens of thousands of employees and, you know, over $10 billion budget, and operations of a sort of technological and operational complexity that sort of boggles the mind. It is simply not the case that there is any external organization that has the NSA under a looking glass.
Indeed. Well, on paper it looks like oversight, but it may be autonomy in actual practice, according to Barton Gellman, a contributor to The Washington Post. Thanks so much, Bart.
Thank you.
Glenn Greenwald, the Guardian reporter who broke the Edward Snowden classified document story and published his leaks, found that his domestic partner was held for nearly 9 hours under British anti-terror legislation at Heathrow Airport. David Miranda, the partner of Guardian reporter Glenn Greenwald, was held under a controversial anti-terrorism law. Mr. Miranda's cell phone, laptops, and memory sticks were confiscated. David Anderson is the UK's independent reviewer of terrorism legislation. He joins us now. Mr. Anderson, welcome.
Thank you.
So is this an appropriate detention in your view? And just describe your position as an independent reviewer here.
I'm a lawyer who is appointed to read the secret stuff. I have the security clearance to do that and then report to our government and to our parliament on whether our terrorist laws are being operated as they should be. Was this an appropriate exercise of the power? I can't get into that today, but what I can say is that it was a very unusual exercise of the power. We have 200 million people a year traveling through our ports and airports in the UK. About 60,000 of those are stopped and examined under the Terrorism Act, and there are some very strong powers the police have in order to do that. And of those 60,000, fewer than 40 are kept for longer than 6 hours. That's in a whole year. So to be kept for 9 hours, as Mr. Miranda was, is highly unusual, and I'm going to be looking further into this.
And the reports from Mr. Gelman, principally, that Mr. Miranda was asked questions about who he'd heard about people talking to, other reporters, how reports were prepared, that sort of thing. It wasn't as though Mr. Miranda was suspected of being an actual terrorist. That's a little disturbing, at least in terms of the rule book by which these investigators can seem to go their own way.
Well, this is an old power, and by modern standards, it's a very extensive power. It can be exercised without the need for any suspicion or belief on the part of the police that a person is a terrorist. But the only purpose for which somebody can be legitimately questioned is in order to determine whether they are a terrorist. And, of course, while asking those questions, there can be all sorts of useful benefits in terms of intelligence and so on. But if you are not asking questions in order to determine whether somebody is a terrorist, then you're not using this power properly.
So, in theory, the UK government could be in some trouble unless it can prove that it was actually looking at Mr. Miranda as a terrorist.
Well, we're almost as litigious over here as you are in New York, and I'm aware of 5 cases in which the exercise of this power or even the existence of this power is being challenged in our courts. We also have a bill going through Parliament, partly in response to recommendations that I made last year, in which Parliament is seeking to review the power and knock some of the rough edges off it. I'm hoping that come the fall, when Parliament gets down to debating this seriously, it's going to have a good look at whether this bill goes far enough or whether they might need to do a little more.
I wonder if you could quickly respond to something that was said on the program earlier, and that is that single individuals such as yourself or small agencies overseeing these giant government surveillance operations are simply overmatched. They can do what they want, even though you're there, and I'm assuming you're a pretty sincere fellow, but you're just overmatched.
Yeah, that's something I'm always conscious of, but I have two great weapons. One is Parliament, one is the media. If they're not showing me stuff, if they're covering things up, I can say so, and they take the consequences.
David Anderson, the UK's independent reviewer of terrorism legislation. You wouldn't want to get on his bad side, that's for sure. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.